This podcast is sponsored by ORC HSE Strategies, an industry leader in developing innovative and sustainable approaches for protecting workers and the environment. ORC membership includes EH&S vice presidents, directors, and senior managers from over 120 large global corporations in 20 different industry sectors. Many member companies like General Electric and Alcoa and GM and ExxonMobil and DuPont and Duke Energy and Siemens Healthcare Diagnostics and Allergan and Procter & Gamble and 3M have very well-established reputations as industry leaders in EH&S. That's like reading the greatest hits list. The value provided by the organization comes from harnessing the collective wisdom of all of these members and from the guidance and facilitation and expertise from the staff with decades of experience in EH&S. If you're interested in learning more about the unique opportunities available through ORCHSE, please contact Linda Haney at 202-510-0509. Or you can pop Linda an email at linda.haney@orchse.com. That's Linda, L-I-N-D-A dot Haney, H-A-N-E-Y, at orchse.com. Now, the podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your host, Todd Conklin. How are you today? It's a big day. I cannot believe it's November already. In fact, if my timing is right on this, today is the day after my birthday. I would have just, I'm 21 years old now. I just kind of passed that Rubicon. Huge party, tons of fun. Man, we had a great time. We should have been there. Too bad you weren't. So the podcast is really interesting today, and I think you're going to find it. It's one of those senior leader podcasts, so they're always fun to listen to because I kind of like to listen to the way these guys talk about kind of new view, reliability, and safety. I got to tell you, I'm so ready for the election to be over. It's almost unbelievable how ready I am. It's crazy. We'll have more details on this, but for now, my head is about to explode. So let's listen to Patrick Morris and Dave Fink, and they're from NS Tech, which is National Security Technologies outside of Vegas, and they're on a big project. So this is project leadership, project management. I think this is a really interesting podcast. Project management's interesting to me anyway, because what they really manage is variability in real time. Lots and lots of change, lots of drift, lots of surprises, lots of unintended events. I mean, that's what these guys manage. And these guys are using really the new view. They're using human performance to actually formulate their safety program. They have great safety guy. They have incredible staff. It's really a good group. I like this podcast because it's a success story podcast. And listen carefully as Patrick talks about leadership and capacity. And what he's really talking about, not that I'm putting words in his mouth, I'm not Patrick, but he's really talking about sort of the confidence that he builds in leaders or the confidence that he allows leaders to build on the project in order to provide the capacity to do this type of high-risk work safely. I think you'll find this podcast incredibly interesting. I should shut up and play it for you. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, will you please sit back and listen to NS Tech, Patrick and Dave, talk about their journey to the new view. Hey, special thanks to ORCHSE, our sponsor. They've done a great job. So here's the podcast. Listen carefully.
Hi, well, I'm Dave Fink, and I'm a project manager running a construction project for National Security Technologies. It's a good-sized project. It's about $40 million. It deals with safety systems in nuclear facilities. And I have with me my director, Patrick Morris.
And I'm Patrick Morris. I'm the director of operations and infrastructure for National Security Technologies. It's a rather large and complex organization comprising about 700 individuals, both bargaining and non-bargaining individuals. And we're responsible for pretty much all the execution of work on the NNSS. Anywhere from just basic site services to construction to maintenance.
What a treat to have you guys on board because, you know, normally the audience that listens to this are a lot of safety professionals, a lot of high-performance computing people, pilots, doctors. And what's interesting is that I think you guys, as really senior leaders in project management, you bring a really different perspective to this idea of what is a safe and reliable system. So when you guys think about sort of doing your work, when you think about safety, when you think about productivity, when you think about schedule and budget, how do you guys define success or failure? What do you guys think about when you think about successfully doing a project?
So when we talk about success, it's being able to meet the customer expectations that we've commonly have agreed to in a safe, secure, and compliant manner.
And so when Patrick charges me to do that, I take that to heart, and then I go down to where we can go down to apply the principles that we've learned in HPI, as well as the industry's evolving in the new view. And how to implement processes that, you know, deal with the fact that we're dealing with humans. Humans are what make us successful, and human failure is a part of that success.
So humans kind of become the wild card in this, because the crazy thing about you guys, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong, because, you know, I'm just making crap up, so totally I could be wrong. But the crazy thing about the best schedule, right, the best budget, variability can mess that up, and people are constantly bringing in variability. They're always a part of that. In fact, what I think about is that plans can't plan for unexpected events. That's actually what you guys do, is you manage the variability and the unexpected part of that. Is that fair?
Well, variability is the norm, right?
Yeah, tell me more about that, because that's really interesting.
So if variability wasn't there, we wouldn't – the human factor would be non-existent, right? You could plan for it. You could put it into a predictable process and let it navigate and manage itself. So what we as leaders and managers bring to the table is setting up an environment that allow people to be successful when variability becomes the day-to-day occurrence.
So, Patrick, how did that happen? How did you start thinking that way? How did that make you successful at what you do? Because I think that's super interesting.
So it really comes back and understanding the fact that, as you'd call it, variability is going to occur. We're going to have upset conditions. We're going to have unscheduled events occur on a routine basis. And to giving people an understanding that the environment is acceptable of those, not welcoming at times, but acceptable of those, and giving them the access to the tools, individuals that they need to respond to those in a productive and I think progressive manner is what enables success.
So how do you get that productive and progressive manner? Is that a mindset? Because I really want to tap into the way a project lead is thinking, because my guess is, and you guys tell me if this is wrong, but my guess is that the world thinks the project will happen perfectly. Everyone in the world except for the people doing the project who know it's not going to be perfect.
Well, this is Dave, and what Patrick told me when I took this project, I hadn't worked for Patrick. I kind of just been put into it. And he said he wanted it done right and safe. And those were his two major charges to me. And so with that, we had to establish a quick bond of trust. And that was tested quickly, both with our oversight and where we, you know, as things go, we ran out of materials. My first week, I had to tell the oversight we had no materials. And so we had to ground down. And because we put everything and dealt with it in an open and honest method and fashion, things worked really well. And then a couple more weeks later, we had a question about the integrity of our construction. So I called the timeout. Now, it's in the first month of work for a new director, reporting directly to him. So this truly stressed his charter to me. And that bond of trust established very quick. I said, here's what I'm going to do. Here's why I'm going to do it. There's a question about the integrity. I had a clear path forward of bringing in quality control and quality assurance to ensure that the integrity of our construction was top notch, and we're validated. And so we found the issue, we fixed it, and we moved on. And one of the things that I stressed in that timeout was, it's not about the individual. This is a classic example where the worker went and did what he could do to keep the project going. Sometimes the paperwork doesn't necessarily catch up, and that's what happened in this. So we went out, we validated that the quality was there, and we ensured that the construction was within the standards, and we moved it. You know, we found our error, we fixed the process, and in the process, we also acknowledged that, hey, that how question came into play. How did that happen? And that's where we fix the process.
So how do you so what I heard, that's great. And what I heard was this notion of establishing trust. But what I really heard is that you guys are courageous enough, you're brave enough to create an environment where you can handle bad news. And to me, one of the things that I get questions about all the time, and you guys, because you're in the position, I hardly ever get to talk to leads like this on major projects. How do you build an environment where it's okay to talk about bad news? Because I'll agree with you. Bad news doesn't get better with age. And the one thing that'll sink a project is not knowing. So what do you guys do to create that environment?
Well, it's we create that environment out of necessity, right? Because if we don't have that environment, failure is your only outcome. And projects have proven that time and time again, that that without providing the workforce, the environment to bring forward the bad news, you have a very diminished chance of success. So we've gone down several paths to make sure that they get that perception. You know, we started at the very top with the president of the company, and we let them know that, you know, if there are issues, there are problems. Bringing them forward is not an adverse action that they need to worry about. There's not an adverse action at the end of the communication that they need to worry about.
So let me ask two questions about that. One is, what is that noise? Are you guys being attacked by a rock band?
I believe it's the hot water heater.
That's fine. It gives the podcast character, so that's not a problem. The second question is that notion of bringing forth bad news. I guess what... So let me give you a scenario, and you guys tell me if I'm crazy. I think the first time... And Dave, your story sort of led to this. The first time you guys had to deal with bad news, the way you guys responded as leaders, project leads, probably set the tone for all the rest of the bad news you'll get on the project. Fair enough?
Very fair. As a matter of fact, knowing that I was going to have to step out and bring forward some bad news to a new boss, as well as to the regulator, and knowing that the answer, you know, what do you need to fix it, and what can I do to help you? I mean, what more could you ask for when you're in an adverse situation?
So that's the concept that you first have to get out of the equation and let people understand that there is no bad news. It's just news, just information. It's an issue, a circumstance that has arisen. It's a risk that we either identified or didn't identify that we're experiencing. And we need to sit down and understand it fully to develop a path forward. And during that process, yes, we're going to ask ourselves some challenging questions. Yes, maybe some painful facts are going to come to the surface. But going through it and going into it with the belief that nobody set out with malicious intent, we're just in discovery. And whatever it is, we need everybody at the table to deal with it. And so the concept that there's bad news is the first thing that we tackled from that perspective. Making sure that people understood that when issues occur, we experience upset conditions, discoveries are made, that bringing them forward is just that. Putting the issue on the table.
So how long did it take to learn that trick? Because that seems like a really important thing for a senior project lead to know.
Well, Well, it's taken us a while to learn it, whether we are still in the throes of getting everybody to understand that. I mean, because, I mean, it's naive to believe that when, you know, there's upset conditions, there's not, you know, consequences because of those. But what we have dealt with effectively is to get people to understand that that as long as the issue is brought forward, we're dealing with it in a productive manner, that the recourses from those upset conditions are measurable and they're minimal from a personnel perspective.
So are you constantly, as you manage a major project like this, are you constantly learning? I mean, is it just a constant feedback loop?
It is. I mean, I can't imagine that that feedback loop ever dying, whether it's during the planning phase, the execution phase, or closing out a project and getting ready for the next project. You got to realize that these workers, although they're working a task today on one project, tomorrow they may be redeployed to work a different task on a very different project with a different set of managers. And if the culture is not consistent when they can traverse from one project to the next, they're going to get consistently mixed signals. And that belief, that culture that you're trying to set up forward, that issues need to be brought forward, they're going to be dealt with in a productive manner, and that they can trust the leadership, is going to die quickly.
I like the way you guys talk about production and safety in the same breath, right? I mean,
it has to be that way, Todd.
Tell me more.
So we've set up that there are three absolutes for the company, that safety, security, and quality/compliance. And we won't tackle any endeavor without those absolutes being adhered to. It's kind of like some of the material I've read out of you, Todd, is that, you know, there is no hierarchy with safety. It's just an absolute.
And so that charge given to me with those boundaries, I can take it down and put it into the organization and establish a just culture where we're blame-free, and start the beginnings of a learning team.
So how did you do that? You got a bunch of guys in hard hats. How do you get them on that same sheet of music?
Well, I've worked really hard. When we had the upset and we had called the timeout, I made it crystal clear, I had an all hands, that this was not about blame. This is about the how. How did the process allow this to happen? And so, you know, everybody's wanting to point the finger for the guy that was trying to keep the project going. That wasn't where I wanted to go, and that wasn't a part of the corrective action, right, or the recovery. It was about verifying that we were, in fact, correct and had our integrity and our high-quality construction, then fixing the how question, fixing the process. Where we've got to still move forward with, and we've got a growth curve, is making the process more elastic.
Tell me more about that. That's interesting.
Well, so, you know, it's back to some of the things like Tony Machara talked of and is a part of the new view. Human error is just a part of daily life. Four to seven an hour, pick your number, right? But we have to create our processes to accommodate that. I'd say very similar to the bowling alley bumpers, right, for young kids. It hits the bumper and it comes back in, but we still roll the ball forward successfully. So there's some areas to look at how we can make that growth and be successful within our processes. And, you know, it's expanding the black line and the blue line and making them converge, right? So when we talk about your work processes, the black and the blue, right?
Right.
So where they can converge in a wider band, we have a very successful process. And we're working towards that. That's not something that happens overnight.
But the idea of making the black line wider, you know, of building a project management plan that has the room for variability or off normal or human error, whatever. I mean, we're all talking about the same thing. That is a bold and I would say rather contemporary way to look at what you guys do for a living.
Well, thanks, Wed. We're trying to progress. I mean, I've been a practitioner since the 2000s and was fortunate enough to be a part of the LANL launch where we went through the early days of the IMPO and the HPI stuff at LANL. You know, it's evolved, and we as humans need to keep learning and evolving, and that's how we get better processes.
So it sounds to me like, and you guys jump in, but it sounds to me like, I love how, Patrick, you said it's something that happens. We don't welcome it, but it happens, right? When you're talking about those initial variabilities, those initial failures, it almost sounds to me like you want the first chance to have an off-normal occurrence on a project site because that allows you to set the tone for all the rest of the off-normal occurrences that happen in your project site. So it almost sounds like if a failure didn't happen, you'd almost want it to, just so you can build in the culture, your ability to respond and learn from failure. Is that fair?
So I think the key between the workforce embracing the leadership on how they're going to respond to off-normal occurrences, the incidents, the accidents, is the trust between the two elements. And so the workforce needs to trust the leadership when they say, we want you to bring the issues forward. You don't need to fear reprisal, unnecessary reprisal, inadequate overbearing reprisal when issues occur, and that we're going to work together to collaborate on figuring out what caused the issue, the upset condition, and preventing reoccurrence to the best of our ability. Is that trust level? And when you break it down into some very basic elemental components, you have character and competence, and they have to trust that we were brought forward as we trust them, that their competence in their respective area that they're working is at the highest level. And then that goes, the rest of it goes into character. Are we going to be consistent? Are we going to walk the talk? Or are we just going to be looking to cover our own skin when issues occur? And if they ever perceive that that's our motivation, then they're going to get off that ship real quick. So as long as you're consistent and you walk that talk, that you really are there to advance the work in the most safe, secure, and compliant manner possible, and making sure that everybody goes home in the same condition they came in that day, just a little bit more tired, then you'll gain their trust, you'll gain their respect, and you'll all be able to be successful together. But if you're not consistent, you don't walk the talk, you come at it with hidden agendas, and you're going to lose their trust quickly, and then that environment's going to erode.
In a way, you're kind of redefining the word accountability. So traditionally, accountability in project management was, culpability. Who owns this? But yeah. What I hear you saying is that you count on the workers' competence and character, and the workers count on your competence and character. And what it is this shared accountability for project success. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It's a shared accountability. It's a shared fate. And the only word that you can put with accountability that makes any sense in that environment is ownership. You have to, that's the first word that has to come out of somebody's mouth or the first thought that they have when they hear the word accountability. It has to be ownership, individual ownership. Because if they think of a reprisal or scapegoat or anything like that, you don't have the environment you're looking for. So if you can get a workforce to collectively define the word accountability as ownership, I think you've really started to put into play and put into place that culture that you're looking for.
So what have you learned on this one? If you had tips for other people leading, projects of any size, it seems like this would cross projects not really dependent on money. What would you tell them? What have you guys learned, and what tips would you give them to be successful?
This is Dave, and I would focus on some of the things in building that trust straight out. Even in the first hints of any adverse occasions of starting to ask why instead of how or who. And when you go straight to that how question and you start looking at processes, people, they're not used to it. And so they're ready to, we live in a culture, we've evolved from a culture of pointing fingers. So when you start saying, how did this happen? Or how do we prevent that? Then you start taking it off that personal thing and look straight for processes. And from that you can build to driving innovation from them, from the floor. And you can give them a little bit of jump start. We have a couple of safety initiatives that we've started on this project that are very small, but we're priming the pump to bring the innovation back up from the floor.
So what's next for you guys on that project? Where are you moving?
We're going to move into a new phase of the construction, and we're going to also look at maybe some learning team sort of work that we came back from the conference. I think there's some room where we can dissect our success and build on it, and at the same time kind of move towards that learning culture instead of out of the old critique culture.
Nice. Patrick, let me ask this question just right straight up to you. For other senior project management people, and there's tons of them out there, what's the one thing you would tell them that this new approach is giving you that's maybe an advantage? Didn't mean to wake you.
No, I'm trying to think of a way to answer the question. I think it's the one thing that's given me is the true perspective that you need to pick leaders that that truly embrace the fact that our people are the most important thing, right? And that developing a level of trust with their teams is their first task, and making sure that they are walking the talks, and that when they insult that environment or they insult that understanding, that they work quickly to recover that is paramount. That's the insight it's given to me, is making sure that you invest in leaders that have that personal integrity, that have that personal commitment to the workforce, and that it's not just, want to say, lip service is the most important thing that we can do.
So what do you think? That's the podcast for today, huh? Interesting. Special thanks to Patrick Morris and Dave Fink for all their chitting and chatting, and for sort of letting us in on the inside, a little inside baseball, if you will, nod to the World Series. It was a great discussion. It's a really interesting journey they're on, and I guess we're all on it, so that makes it extra cool as well. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast as much as I did. It was fun to put together and pretty darn fun to listen to. I'll give you that one. Until then, learn something new every single day. Have as much fun as you possibly can, and for goodness sakes, be safe.